It's the John Curley and Sherry Elicker show. Greg Tomlin and Jake Skorheim filling in. All right, Jake, I'm going to do my best Curley impression here.
All right.
To kick off the first segment of every hour. What does he do? Here we go. Jumping into some stories that we're going to talk about today.
That's all right. You can't compete with Curley. He's pretty
nailed
good at it.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it.
Yeah.
Have you been to Redmond Town Center recently?
You know what? I haven't, but I have. I've heard good things.
I have like doctor's appointments there, but it's a nice place to walk around. I think they just have a guitar center there that sometimes I'll pop my head into.
They have. Last time I was there, they had some sort of a nice steakhouse or something.
Oh yeah, they got it all.
Yeah, it's a nice place. Very expensive. Is it Microsoft right expensive. There.
Beautiful part of town. Yes.
Beautiful.
Nice hotels and all that. Well, just a few minute walk away, the landscape could be changing here. So Tuesday night, dozens of people went to Redmond City Hall to voice support or opposition for a proposed permanent supportive housing project. This is spearheaded by the Plymouth Housing Organization. Project was originally intended to be built where? In Kenmore, but intense opposition led to city leaders tossing out that plan, which I think was appropriate, personally. So in February, city leaders in Redmond voted to take the first step necessary for this project to get underway, transferring publicly owned land to Plymouth Housing. And so what does a transfer of publicly owned land entail? Well, no public hearings about it and no vote with the constituency, which they don't have to be clear. But when word of this project got out, it created some dissatisfaction with some Redmond residents. And here's just a little taste of what demonstrators sounded like last night. This audio, courtesy of Jonathan Cho.
We do not want to see on our streets something that's happening in Seattle.
The rally is about getting people to have a say. The city council did this without taking any input from the residents, the taxpayers, and they just did it in secret.
So rescind the decision to give the public land to Plymouth Housing.
I know the governor has been very vocal about bringing homeless to all the cities in Eastside because he thinks Eastside should, you know, take the burden of that to help out. However, why should Eastside cities help with the mess that Seattle created for themselves?
So 100 planned units here. People who are low income and just getting out of homelessness, in theory, will be the ones admitted into these units. There will be some guidelines for people that want to live there. 24/7 staffing. There's a code of conduct that addresses threatening behavior, having weapons, alcohol, marijuana usage, along with using and selling illegal drugs. Final program rules and conduct will be reviewed and approved by the Redmond Police Department, Jake.
Can we go back to one thing that you mentioned earlier? And I'm not fully grasping this, but you said that there was a land transfer that happens. So explain to me. So are they just giving this land to, or they're making it available to
the city? Owns the land.
The city owns the land, and it was originally bought for light rail purposes. Is that right?
I believe so. That's part of the story, right?
So it was originally bought for light rail purposes,
this is about a 3 minute walk from Redmond Town Center. It's right across the street from Anderson Park there in Redmond. There's a Dozone dumpling house, which is delicious, by the way, just across the street here. So it's a major hub of activity in this area where they're proposing to put in this housing project. And rightfully so, there's some trepidation on the part of some people who live in the area or frequent the area.
The part that jumps out at me that really would – I don't live in Redmond – you know, obviously I don't get down there much, but I know it's a beautiful area. Kind of the thing that people say a lot of times, like when we're here in Seattle, like we work in Seattle, and oftentimes we will say, why don't they have these issues? Like Seattle has a lot of issues right now. Seattle has a lot of issues with drug use in public. They have a lot of violent crime. They have a lot of homeless issues that they're dealing with. And Seattle has kind of made itself the place that those things are just going to keep happening. And, you know, I understand that they recently voted in a lot of new city council members. They're trying to address that issue, but it got pretty bad.
There's some moderating going on to a degree.
To a degree.
Yeah.
But everybody kind of goes, you know what? That's why people like the East Side, because they don't deal with these same issues on the East Side.
But it's metastasized, and these problems are coming whether people like it or not. And here's what I think the bigger issue is, Jake, and that is one-party rule in the state of Washington. And that's not coerced, by the way. Constituents have voted for people who have implemented these policies that are slowly and incrementally, you know, having been injurious to these various towns, whether it's Seattle or now more and more on the east side. The key here is we need more strict enforcement of laws, drug use, camping, other crimes, forcing people into treatment, even against their will. I think involuntary is part of this. But the burden that lawlessness has had on our region on law-abiding citizens necessitates a change in course, but people aren't voting for it. I mean, let's be clear. There's a few demonstrators outside Redmond City Hall here, but whether it's state senators, state representatives, or city council members, I mean, you get what you vote for. And so I think, you know, I've been in and around talk radio for 16, 17 years. I've heard constant complaints about the leaders in this area, particularly from people that lean to the right, again, because we've had blue party rule for decades and decades. I think there needs to be a change of tactic if you really want conditions to change in the region. I think we have to start just berating the governor all day long, or berating Dow Constantine for how awful and terrible he's made this. These people were voted in, okay? Unless you're persuading the hearts and minds and convincing your neighbors and your community that we need to change course, you're just speaking verbal diarrhea to the masses that's kind of making no impact. I think we need to start again, this is a theme of the first hour, on a much more fundamental level, which is convincing people that what we've done so far is not working. Stop just decrying the people at the top because they didn't get there by forcing themselves into power by violence, right? People put them there.
Yeah, no, they were voted in. Yeah, and Jay Inslee, he's not running for a re-election again, so maybe things will change when he's no longer governor. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, like Washington has had the longest of any state in the country. They've had the longest run of single-party rule, which I think is like, I don't know, 35 years or something like that.
At least at the very top, yeah. I mean, there's regions out here.
As far as governorship goes. And so but the thing that jumps out to me about this story that just would drive me crazy, especially if I was living in Redmond, and it's always a red flag for me when something like this goes down, the fact that they did not have to ask people in Redmond what they thought about it, the fact that there was no public comment, like in my neighborhood, I live in Snohomish County.
Yeah.
And anytime there's even a new development going in, you know, and which they're doing now everywhere. They're just finding these big swaths of land. They're clearing trees. They're building houses. I understand that. There's a great need for them. I have no problem with them doing that. But there's always that community notice that they put out when these things are being built. You have the opportunity to voice your displeasure, if you want, with one of these places going in. You could talk to your local city officials. You could literally call the companies that are building these big like tracts of homes. But in this case, the city has just given this over. The public, to me, sounds like they're not super excited about this.
At least some of them.
Five of them that showed up to this thing. I don't know how many showed up.
The protest is anecdotal. But what you're making for an argument for here is that the policy needs to be changed and that whenever there's a land transfer, then the public must be informed and the city of Redmond would be obligated to open it up for public comment. So you're arguing for a measure that would change that. And obviously, I think you're also hinting at the fact that they probably wanted to implement this housing project quietly, knowing that there might be some disdain for that policy.
So here's the part of the story that I just don't like. And I don't think this is – the city of Redmond needs to answer these questions because I don't think this is right. According to the city's website, Redmond bought the property in 2019. They're spending tax dollars to do that. That's just – they're not given the property. They bought the property in 2019 to accommodate a light rail alignment project. Now, does that mean that secretly all along they just knew, oh, someday we're not actually going to need this project for anything light rail related. So in 5 years, in 2024, we're just going to sell this to whoever we want to. Not even, and we don't have to ask the public's opinion about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, if I lived in Redmond, I'd be very upset about that because I wouldn't want some of these problems. Like you mentioned, there's a park right there. I left Seattle. When my wife and I lived in Seattle, we lived in Green Lake in Seattle until my son was about 6 months old. And my wife was walking my son through Green Lake Park, which has gotten better since we were here. We were here 9 years ago. But she was walking him through Green Lake Park, Kids tend to want to play on the ground when they go into a park or crawl around in the grass. There's needles and stuff on the grass. Mm-hmm. And so that's a problem. And that comes with a lot of times when you have drug use and you have homeless issues in certain areas, it makes it unlivable for the rest of us. And, I can understand that the people in Redmond don't want those problems, which we look at as Seattle problems. We don't want those problems in a place like on the east side. So I think it's totally fair for them to be upset about this. And I think the city of Redmond should answer those questions.
I'm just going to close out this segment with
a
Milton Friedman quote, Jake, incoming. He was an economist and statistician who once said, and I think this does apply to our conversation if we're to ever chart a different course in this region here. Quote,
Which they won't.
Let's be honest. Oh, wow. Thanks for the dramatic music. I do not believe that the solution to our problem is simply to elect the right people. The important thing is to establish a political climate of opinion which will make it politically profitable for the wrong people to do the right thing. Unless it is politically profitable for the wrong people to do the right people will not do the right thing either.
Wise words.
Okay, so we can shake our fists on the air, raise our voices, and decry our leaders.
Yeah, but nothing's
or various city councils in the area and so on. But the fact of the matter is, Jake, that ideology has won the day. It's won over the Northwest. Otherwise, these people wouldn't be in seats of power making decisions.
Though?
Okay, it's easy for us on the radio to say incendiary things, mock our political leaders. But the bottom line is we don't live in a totalitarian, authoritarian, dictatorial state. We have a voice in the matter, and these people represent us. So if we're going to see that different direction, we need to get better at persuading our neighbors.
Listen,
that there is a more desirable path to take.
If it can happen in a place like Seattle with the Seattle City Council, which is definitely moving more centrist than it was, and they're more business friendly now.
At least
to a degree. If it can happen in a place like Seattle, then yes, absolutely. And, you know, I don't care if somebody wants to vote Democrat, Republican. I just want people to be focusing on let's make the areas that we live in friendly for families so it's safe for kids. So I don't have to worry about walking my kids around finding needles. That's scary. Any parent knows. Like, that's just, like, frightening.
Pretty basic.
Pretty basic right. stuff. I don't have, like, a lot I'm asking for. It's like, I don't like fairy lines, and I don't like finding needles on the ground.
Yeah.
Those are the things I get really passionate about. Should we talk about drugs really fast? Do we have time to talk about drugs?
Really fast.
Like, I mean, like, pretty quick here, because we got to check in with some traffic here.
I'm always down for a robust dialogue about drugs.
So Jay Inslee, was that just today? Did he sign that thing? Jay Inslee signed that?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. I'm sorry. He signed 7 new opioid bills. Opioid laws into law. Where is this here? Where's this Jay Inslee story? So he signs these into law. And the interesting thing about this is I was just talking about this with my kids this morning, and I was going to ask you about this.
How often do you talk to your kids about fentanyl?
How often do I talk about them with fentanyl?
Do you have toddlers?
Well, they're 8, 6, and 4. I have
okay.
Yeah, and I have a fourth son on the way, so he won't need to talk about fentanyl for at least 2 years after he's born.
So are you one of these dads that gets to your kids early and tries to scare the bejesus out of them into doing the right thing?
Like, well, I'm evolving. I'm not quite sure what the right path is because, again, my kids are really young. Like, I'm just starting to have to do these things. My son, this morning at breakfast, he was telling us this hilarious story about one of his friends in school who found a box of noodles. You know, like, It was a box of noodles. They found a box mm-hmm. of noodles on the ground, and they thought it was hilarious to eat these noodles. Now, that is a weird story, and it's disgusting, and they thought it looked like worms, and that's gross. But the point is, kids pick things up off the ground, and they eat them. And it scared me. And so I don't know what it was. Something triggered in my head. He was like, oh, a box of noodles. I was like, don't eat noodles. One, to my sons. I was like, don't pick
Rule
up things
number
and eat
one,
them on the ground.
Kids in this household.
Yeah, don't eat noodles
don't
off
eat
the ground.
Don't eat dry noodles off the ground.
But then.
Number two.
The other one was. And
don't
I, this
smoke
was,
fent.
Well, this was a really awkward transition because we're all sitting there having breakfast and they're like literally like eating their cinnamon toast.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, by the way, guys, also, just to tack on to the noodle conversation. You guys know what fentanyl is? And how do you tell your kids
nice.
About fentanyl without telling them about it?
I like how you eased into it.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's nice transition. It's because I work in radio. I'm really good at that kind of stuff. So I'm like, listen, guys, by the way, like, hey, guys, your attention here, buddies. And I'm trying to have this conversation with, you know, 8 down to 4.
Right.
And I'm like, guys, like, you know, when you find stuff on the ground, like the noodles you just were talking about, sometimes there's like other things that you might find on the ground. Like you might find pills and things that look like candy. And we never take candy off the ground, right, guys? And they all kind of like laugh at me. Kids would kids love candy, and they're going to get it. They're going to eat it if they can.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a parent, it freaks me out because we see these stories. Like this fentanyl thing was this law that Jay Inslee just signed into law, one of these seven laws, one of these seven bills or whatever. He signed them in because there was a kid whose name was Lucas. He was 17 years old at the
time. Smoked marijuana.
He smoked what he thought was just marijuana, and it was laced with fentanyl, and it cost him his life.
Right.
That is a nightmare scenario for parents. And we've done so many stories on my show where we talk about, like, there was kids up in Everett. There was an infant up in Everett who was who found just a foil that had fentanyl on it in his parents' house and touched the foil, and the toxicity from that sent them to the emergency room. There was another one who died because they found a pill and put it in their mouth. And so as parents, I'm just like, how do you have these conversations with
your
terrifying.
Kids? Terrifying. No, I know. And what I find constantly surprises me as a parent is that whatever issue comes up, there's no guidebook. And every kid is so different.
Yeah.
And you introduce different levels of fear and terror in your kid's mind depending on what age they are and how mature they are.
Yeah.
I remember this one time my daughter was like 5 years old. So this is 8 years ago. And at that age, it's like the last time you have this blissful ignorance as a child. You don't really understand evil in the world. Maybe you skinned your leg at some point. But I remember looking at her one day when she was relaxing. She had her hands behind her head.
Life is good.
Yes. And I looked at her from afar and I went, she will never be as innocent again in life as she is right at this moment.
It's carefree.
And part of me was sad about that. And then the other part of me said, but I need to teach her about the ways of the world like sooner than later because it'll be a rude awakening.
Yeah.
And so as they age, just a little bit at a time, you kind of ruin their innocence or ruin that ignorance is bliss mentality that they have, whether it's talking to them about drugs at a given age. And I don't begrudge you for what you did. I think you probably made the right choice because, you kind of instilled a little fear in them. But at the same time, that's a healthy fear that is probably going to end up keeping them safe at the end of the day.
I don't want to do it, but I need to do it. Like fentanyl at four. Over breakfast. Yeah, it doesn't make
me
feel
good. Had to be done.
Had to be done, right? You got to make hard choices as a parent.
The John Curley and Sherry Ellicker show continues. Greg Talman and Jake Skorheim sitting in, the dynamic duo today. How's that 401k looking, Jake? Dow Jones Industrial Average record highs closed at 39,512 today, up 401 points. My goodness.
What is a 401k?
So
oh,
savings?
Such a great question. That's, I ask myself that every day.
So it's something. Why is it called 401?
Good question.
Can we get the Google machine on that?
Yeah, if only there was somewhere to find out.
Yeah, I mean, things are looking up for the economy, at least by one measure, which is a very good, healthy sign for society. So I was pleased to see that today. But here's the thing. If you've been sitting on the sidelines and waiting for that dip, it's not coming. You just got to get in. If you're thinking about investing at any time, throw the money in there. There's going to be an inevitable crash at some point. But it's so hard to predict the market. So unpredictable.
Can't do it.
Anyways, I'm going into this next story blind. Jake, you have something to regale me with, as well as the listening audience, a folksy anecdote of sorts?
This is a folksy anecdote, yeah. So the other day, fairy stories are very, very interesting, I think, to our listeners, because we all end up in the fairy line. We do a ton of stories on the Washington State Ferry System.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys been covering this as well? Like, the Washington State Ferry System is very frustrating because normally they should have something like 21 boats operating, and as we get closer into the summertime now, as people are starting to line up at the ferry terminals, you're waiting longer and longer. There's seasonal struggles, and the reason you're waiting longer and longer is for a number of reasons. One, they're usually down a bunch of boats. Like we just got an email last night. We get these updates from the Washington State Ferry System where it says, oh, we've got a boat down on this line, which means we're moving this boat to here,
mm-hmm.
and this boat to here, which means we're going to be down so many boats. So very often they're operating at like 2/3 capacity. They should have 21, 22 boats running, but sometimes they're running as little as like 12 or 13 boats, which means that we end up sitting and waiting for a very, very long time on these lines. The other thing, which is a real bummer about these ferry lines, is you find that often it's not even the boats that are having issues, and these boats are old. A lot of these are like, some of these boats that they're running are 60 years old. It's not always boat issues. Sometimes it's just staffing issues. Like they will have like not enough staff. Now, I don't know how you can run a ferry system and not know that you need more staff, but that's something they need to figure out. But this happened to me over the weekend, and I want to share this story with you guys. So Saturday, my wife and I decide, because it's a super nice sunny day, what would be the funnest thing we could do in the world? Why don't we go sit in the car with the kids for a long time? So we decide to go over to my in-laws' house. My in-laws live over near Port Townsend.
Okay.
So we can either go north around Whidbey Island, take the boat, you know, over Deception Pass and take whatever boat that is. We could go south. We could drive all the way down to Tacoma, and we could try to get over the bridge and all that stuff. Or we could take the Edmonds-Kingston Ferry. And this time of year, mid-March, there probably is not going to be a ton of traffic getting on that boat.
Sounds great in theory.
Sounds great in theory. The problem is that the ferry system is in such a cluster right now.
Mm-hmm.
We waited almost 3 hours when we got into that line. And
nice.
You know what I'm talking about? Like anybody listening who's taken the Edmonds Ferry, you come down out of the city of Edmonds and you go down that big long hill and you're kind of like dreading looking around the corner to see like, oh, is it backed
every
up?
Every moment you inch closer, you're thinking, yes, 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 but yes, I'm waiting for
and
the slap in the face.
And then you see that line of cars just like terror. Do you take that ferry often?
My grandparents lived in Bremerton, so sometimes we would take the ferry. I've gone to Bainbridge Island a few times, but not recently.
Okay. So it hasn't changed much. It's actually gotten worse. So what happened was we get into this line. It's pretty far up the hill. So we're pretty far up the hill to start with. It's ridiculous. So we're waiting. We're about an hour 15 in, and we're just sitting in my truck because we're going to go get some stuff from my
in-laws.
The whole family. We're bringing some stuff out to them from storage. So we have a ton of stuff. We're loaded down with stuff, which is why we took the truck and not the van. If we had known we were going to be in the car for 6 hours that day, total on each side, 3 hours on each side waiting for these boats, obviously I would never have done it. I would not voluntarily sit in the car with my three sons for almost any price, but I certainly wouldn't do it in my truck, which means they are literally like breathing down my neck sitting behind me. So we're sitting there, but that's not the issue. We're sitting there, that's my fault, in the truck, but we're about an hour 15 in. Traffic is moving at a snail's pace. You're just like slowly, like car by car going down the hill. And then out of the corner of my eye, I see this big giant U-Haul truck who's bombing down the hill, comes down the hill. And for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's the friendly look that I have plastered on my face all the time, but
sure,
he thinks that I'm just a moron. And he pulls up next to me and he stops. And again, there's probably 150, 200 cars.
Puts on the blinker?
Behind me. Not yet. He sits there, and because it's Seattle and because people are weird in this town, he doesn't actually make eye contact with me. He kind of just like looks ahead of me. You can't see this because this is an audio medium. It's not visual, but if you're watching the cameras, he's just looking ahead of me as if projecting where he hopes the U-Haul will magically appear, which is right in front of my car in the line of the ferry boat waiting line that we've already been in for like an hour and change.
Right. Did you flash a look of askance him?
The first thing I did was like look over at my wife. I'm like, is this guy serious? Like, is he?
What's your most judgy face that you could have flashed towards him? Sorry, I'm interrupting.
Well, again, no, well, it's audio medium. It basically looks like my face I have right now. I don't have a whole lot of like expression.
Resting judgy face. Sure.
Yeah. No, it's like a resting smiley face, which is probably why he picked me. But anyway, so he pulls up next to me and he sits there, and now traffic is starting to build behind him, which I think he is assuming like the onus is then transferred over to me to let him in so that I'm going to let traffic pass. And again, he's in a big U-Haul truck. And so my wife's like, don't let him in. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, I'm not going to let him in. It's ridiculous. Like, have a little confidence in your husband. And so I don't let him in. And I'm not going to let him in. I'm like, he doesn't even understand. With three kids in the car, I'm looking for a fight at this point. I'm like, I'm on edge.
Let's go.
Yeah, I'm on edge.
Sun's out, guns out.
I need a win. And the sun was out. Saturday was a beautiful day. Super nice. So there's a lot of traffic going down into Edmonds.
Guns, muscles. We're not talking firearms.
No,
but
no,
continue.
No. Yeah, sun's out, buns out would be a better one. But anyway, so he's in the U-Haul truck. He's sitting there. And after about 2 minutes, no joke, which is a long time to just sit there and do nothing, I'm like, and at this point now, I'm looking over my shoulder at him. I'm just like, I have no problem just making eye contact with him. I'm trying to, at least. He's not making eye contact
with
me.
Staring contest now.
Yeah, well, he's kind of youngish. I don't know.
Game of chicken.
Yeah, and he's hoping that I just will give way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I stand strong. I hold the line. And so he then clicks on his blinker. As if I don't understand what he's trying to do. As if the blinker is going to be some magic password that suddenly gets him in on the line. Here's the cool thing about this situation, though. Again, we're an hour and change. We're waiting in the hill. The bond that you form with the people waiting in line with you to get on a ferry boat.
They wanted you to hold your ground.
Oh, my gosh. No.
They wanted you to act as a bulwark against an intrusion from this U-Haul.
No, there are two. And I've never been to war, so I don't know if this analogy actually works out. But there are two times in life that you can so quickly establish a bond with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the trenches,
sure,
fighting in battle. It's waiting
on the Western Front.
Yeah, or it's waiting in the line for a ferry boat, watching somebody try to cut in front of you.
Right.
I don't let him in at all. I don't.
Good for you.
He sits there for about 5 minutes, which is a long time. Traffic is building up behind him. Some guy finally rolls down his window and does the universal, like, turn it around, buddy. And then like 15, 16 people start doing it. We're all doing it together. Like we all speak this common language now. I tell you what,
wow.
My soul was singing. I was so excited.
You should run for office.
I was so excited. This guy, yes.
Love isn't always on time.
I felt great. I felt great. It felt like a win. And I felt like I'm doing this for everyone. Like, I don't want to call myself a hero, whatever. Other people have said it. I'm not going to say it. But I felt like I was doing something special and important.
This was your own personal Oregon Trail. I mean.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah, it was in a way. But he didn't get in line. He didn't get in line that day. And he's not getting in line in front of me ever. So
the
my
moral
story.
Of the story is?
Just don't let people cut in line. It's wrong. It's evil. That guy should just go straight to you know where.
What time of the day was this, by the way?
This was at about noon on a Saturday.
Oh, you don't want to take the ferry after like 7 o'clock on
I know that now, Andrew. Thank you.
That's the moral of the story. Don't take the ferry past 7 a.m.
Don't take the ferry boat.
You have more fortitude than I do.
Would you have let him in?
I tend to try to choose the avenue that will deflate tensions as quickly as possible.
Big mistake.
And I call it being a peacemaker. You probably call it being a wuss.
No, I wouldn't.
But
call
I would
you
have
names.
Been like, have your way. I don't want to start anything here. Like, if I would have let him in just in that instant, a couple cars behind me would have been mad for 30 seconds, but it wouldn't have been a showdown. I never know
dude.
Who I'm dealing
no.
with. Who's that person who's trying to be a jerk right now?
No.
And if I try to meet him where he's at,
mistake.
I mean, all bets are off.
You know what? Let us know. On the.
I can't endorse.
Let us know
your
on the Marcos Rube Casino Resort text line, 888-973-5476.
Fernando said on the text line, he said, Jake, great. It's day 5 of your ferry boat anger.
Yes, I told this story on my show already. By the way, download the podcast,
Kyra
Nice with Jake Skorheim.
The John Curley and Sherry Elliker Show, Greg Tomlin and Jake Skorheim in today. Jake, what's your all-time favorite dessert?
I'm a great fan of pie. I actually ate half an apple pie between yesterday, last night, and this morning.
A dessert with fruit in it, like apple pie?
Yeah, apple pie.
Raspberry
pie? Yeah, Dutch apple pie.
No, thanks.
Yummy.
Hard pass. My all-time favorite is a fresh chocolate chip cookie right out of the oven. There's nothing better on God's green earth. If I'm feeling frisky, maybe add a little vanilla ice cream to that. So behold, a Philadelphia-based late-night cookie company is planning to open its first Seattle location in the U District. Why? Well, because there's lots of students there. This is going to be just blocks from the University of Washington's campus. This company is called Insomnia Cookies, maybe a competitor to Crumble. Cookies stores seem to be all the craze right
have
now.
Have you gone to Crumble?
I have. Of course I've gone.
Okay,
look
yeah,
at me.
So.
Have I gone to Crumble? Do I look like someone who's gone to Crumble?
I have
look
not.
Look at the waistline.
Is it good? Is Crumble good? People talk about it.
If you get them fresh, they're excellent. Sometimes they put a little too much frosting on their weird cookies.
Is it a place where people wait in line?
It is one of those places in many instances, yes.
We'll get to cookies.
One near
in just
Crossroads
second.
Mall. But anyways, neither here nor there.
No, it is here nor there. Quick question.
Okay.
Why do people wait in line for stuff like that? Do you wait in line for stuff like that?
We're all just animals, and we see what the herd does, and we go, people are in line. I must have to stand in line as well. Must be something I can't miss.
Doesn't it make you so angry, though, I know we were just talking about lines. Clearly, you guys know I hate lines, but when you see a line for food, doesn't it drive you crazy that somebody would stand in line for a
cookie? No. Those are some of the best places to eat. You ever go to California and the In-N-Out Burger? There's always like 50 people there because they have the best burger.
Well,
that's where you want to eat.
That's true.
So
get back to your
Insomnia
story.
Cookies uses this app for delivery options for their hot, fresh, and cookies and ice cream. This sounds like propaganda. But they're open till 3 a.m., which is kind of a wild thing. So I remember in college, everybody gets the munchies, whether you're smoking the jazz cabbage or not. And our late night food establishment of choice was called Pizza Pipeline in Spokane. I went to Whitworth College.
I've heard of Pipeline.
It was just down the street. Their pizza back in the day, I'd give it a 6 out of 10, but you don't
pretty
discriminate
good.
When you're 18 years old, a freshman, and you're playing ping pong at like 1 a.m. and that place is still open. But they had something called Tricky Sticks there. These Tricky Sticks.
Family friendly.
Yeah. Do you have any like lustful music over there, Andrew, like George Michael or something like that? But anyways, so what they would do with these Tricky Sticks is it was twisted dough. that they would lather up with butter.
Like a breadstick.
Yeah. And they'd put it in the oven. Then they'd put cinnamon and sugar all over it. And then they'd give you like a half cup of this cream cheese.
Can you say it slower?
Frosting dipping sauce.
Say it louder. You guys heard of ASMR? Just describe what you're describing. And just do it a little slower.
And you would look at these tricky sticks and think, I know I have a girlfriend, but I'm in love. I'm in love with this.
These are really good.
Forget the freshman 15. For me, it was the freshman 50. Thank you, Tricky Sticks.
Is it a, what is the cinnamon roll place? Cinnabon. Does it feel like a Cinnabon type of a deal?
10 times better than a Cinnabon.
Tricky Sticks. Okay.
But I just want to caution you college students out there who might be really excited about the late night orders of your insomnia cookies. It only takes 40 days to develop a new habit. Try two semesters.
Okay.
And what you're looking at here on the video live stream at Cairo Radio is what you get. Everything in moderation, kids. Enjoy those insomnia cookies, but do it with caution.
I love it.